your day, and hopefully you've already been celebrated and will continue to be. You know, as I think in keeping with kind of our theme for the day with the song, Let It Be, our moms are one of those that have spoken some truth into our lives and said, hey, maybe you need to just let that be. I think in my own life, my own journey, there were times where my mom said, let it be, and I didn't follow her advice like I should have. You remember one time I was about 13 years old. It was about this time of year. The reason why I know that is because I didn't feel like I had a tan going into summer like I needed to have. So I went down to the store with my own money. I bought this bottle. It was a white bottle, and it was called QT, Quick Tanning. And now this is before the days of YouTube, okay? You don't get to watch a video on this, how to do this. You have to read the instructions, and I wasn't much into instructions because I kind of felt like theirs were going to be conservative. And I mean, I wanted a tan. So I squeeze this stuff into my hand. First of all, my mom says, just let it be. Like, you're good. You're great for the summer. You'll get a tan. Well, you may not be able to tell by my hair today, but I had red hair, freckles. Like, I didn't tan. I just burned. Just different shades of red. And I wanted to look like brown, like tan. So I bought this stuff against my mom's advice, and I put it on and rubbed it all over the places I wanted tan, which was my entire body, especially my face. And I looked in the mirror, nothing. So I put more on. And I continued to go until pretty much the bottle is empty, and I thought, this is junk. Like, I just wasted my money. It really didn't take too long after that. And I looked in the mirror, and the way I would describe it today is it looked like a human being that is sponge painted with like old Starbucks coffee grounds. That was kind of the look I had going on. And I went into my mom and said, what the? And she's like, well, yeah, that's what I expected. She helped me scrub all of this off of me, which was, well, you know what? I guess the plus when it was all said and done, I was red again afterwards, after all that scrubbing. So I did get the color I wanted after all. Yeah, you know, moms know best. And, you know, when life has its ups and downs, we go to our moms, or our moms at least come to us, and try to give some advice and try to help us along the way. And as we look at this song, as we're in this series, Faith and Rock and Roll, even the Beatles, their moms had profound impacts on them. And certainly with Paul McCartney, this was the case. So the year here is 1970, and Paul McCartney had been working very, very hard to hold the Beatles together. Things were unraveling. Things were, fractures were starting to happen in the Beatles, significant fractures. In fact, 3 years earlier, the death of their manager proved really to be too much for the Beatles. They were not going to sustain this much longer. And Paul was trying to hold them together, but he couldn't hold them together. And he one night had a dream about his mom. His mom's name was Mary, and she had passed away in 1956 from an embolism. But here's how he remembers the dream that he had about his mom. He said, one night during this tense time, I had a dream, and I saw my mom, who'd been dead 10 years or so, and it was so great to see her because, well, that's the wonderful thing about dreams. You actually are reunited with the person for a second. I mean, there they are, and you appear to both be physically together again. It was so wonderful for me, and she was very reassuring. In the dream, she said, it'll be all right. Now, I'm not sure if she used the words, let it be, but that was the gist of her advice. It was, don't worry too much. It will all turn out okay. It was such a sweet dream. I woke up thinking, oh, it really was great to visit with her again. I felt blessed to have that dream. So that got me to writing the song, Let It Be. I literally started off Mother Mary, which was her name, and when I find myself in times of trouble, which I certainly found myself in, the song was based on that dream. Well, as the writing of that song, and before it even actually hit the airwaves, the Beatles had broke up, and the era of the Beatles was over. But both the song and their 12th album, titled the same, Let It Be, was a fitting title for the end of the group. And even though the Mother Mary in the song was relating specifically to Paul's mother, many have heard religious overtones in the song, and Paul acknowledged this. Another quote from him, he says, Mother Mary makes it a quasi-religious thing, so you could take it that way. He says, I don't mind. I'm quite happy if people want to use it to shore up their faith. I have no problem with that. I think it's a great thing to have faith of any sort, particularly in the world that we live in. Now, this song has been covered by a myriad of artists. The popularity of the song and the popularity of his message has hit a lot of people. Artists like the Zac Brown Band, Ray Charles, Justin Bieber. There's even a version on Sesame Street. Now, they did change the name from Let It Be to Letter B, and it was all about the letter B, but it's still a good version. But without further ado, I would like to add to that list Hillcrest's own cover band. Here come Tick and the Weevils. Give it up for them.
Better clap a little more than that. We don't come cheap. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there'll be an answer, let it be. But though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. There will be an answer, let it be. The night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine till tomorrow, let it be. I wake up to the sound of music. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be. Let it be, speaking words of wisdom, let it be, let it be.
Way to go, Tick and the Weevils. Appreciate your efforts, your work. They say they didn't come cheap, but I don't even know what that means. I haven't paid them anything, so I think they do come pretty cheap. Well, as we think of things like what Paul McCartney was going through at this difficult time for them, that even a guy like Paul McCartney would go through hard times, it's no wonder, and it shouldn't be a surprise, that you and I go through hard times. It really doesn't matter who you are, when you've lived, you know, what your situation is. We all go through tough times in our lives. Maybe you'd call them struggles, or maybe you'd even call it suffering. But these are things that can't be avoided in life. I mean, it's part of our journey. I think sometimes it seems like we're trying to focus on or trying to make sure that there is no suffering that will take place in our lives, that there's no difficulty that will, you know, fall upon us. And it's just not really a reality to think that we can create a life where there is no suffering or difficulty, because people do get sick. Things break. You know, relationships get wounded. Dreams don't get fulfilled. Expectations are not always realized. You know, even if you shunned all human contact, as if that's where, you know, any problems in life come from, and tried to live out in some cabin by yourself out in the sticks, I think Mother Nature would still figure out a way to have that little black rain cloud follow you around, and against all of your best efforts, you still find yourself getting wet with rain. Now, I have no intention on depressing you today, okay? It's Mother's Day, and I want us to be uplifted, but at the same point, that this is a reality, right? I mean, these are the things of life, that things are difficult at times, but just because things are difficult doesn't mean we have to be in despair, doesn't mean we have to be depressed, that there is good that can come out of these moments. In fact, you know, for myself, I don't always see life as beneficial when the effort is to avoid difficulty, because I think when you start to focus on avoiding difficulty, you start looking for it. You know, when you start thinking, I need to create a life where I have no problems and no troubles, you're looking for those troubles, and when they come, they hit you even harder, because here you thought you were able to stave them off. You were able to avoid these kinds of things, and I think that's when you can become depressed or broken or even hopeless. Seems like there are some people that have, might I use the word gift, to find something negative or bad in every situation in life. You know a few people like that? But then there are other people that seem to find positiveness in those same moments in life. It's like the person who has an ice cream cone, and they start eating their ice cream cone. They get halfway through the cone, and then the inevitable happens, and for some way, somehow, that ice cream falls off the cone, or they drop the cone completely. Now, you have all kinds of different responses. The normal response is to be upset about the dropping of the ice cream cone. You're going to be upset that you dropped it. You're going to be upset because of the waste of money. Or if your kid dropped, you're going to start blaming your kid for something they were doing. All of a sudden, they're crying, and you're like, wow, we made this great moment together to go get ice cream, right? I was with someone one time in which the person dropped their ice cream, and I was expecting the same response. Like, I was getting ready to laugh at the person, because that's how I roll. And as they looked at the ice cream on the ground, they said, "Thank God." I was like, "What? Like, you just dropped your ice cream." They said, "I had just eaten half of this ice cream. I did not need any more on my hips. Praise the Lord, it hit the ground." I thought, well, now that's a way to look at it, right? You see, you can find something good or bad in every situation. It just depends how you choose to look at it, or how you've disciplined yourself to look at it over, you know, many experiences. It's not always something we can change immediately, but it is something that we can start to shift the way we look at these moments in our lives that are difficult, that are struggles, and even the areas that I'd say are suffering. We can choose to look at them differently, and as a result of looking at them differently, have a different outcome in our life as a result of that. I guess for me, I see hard times as opportunities to become a better me. Let me explain this. I'm not an overly positive person by nature. I'm not always bubbly. I'm not, you know, when bad things happen, I'm not, oh, praise the Lord, or oh, joy. Like, I struggle with things as much as anyone else does. I have a hard time accepting some of the difficult moments and the times of suffering in my own life, trying to make sense of them, trying not to fall into despair in some of those things. Sometimes I have a hard time finding something positive in the things that have hurt me in life. And as a pastor, I've sat with many of you in hospital rooms in which maybe the news ends up being some kind of miraculous healing and we're celebrating. And I can be with another family with a very similar situation, and the person dies unnecessarily. And I don't always know the rhyme or reason why something happens in one situation than it does in another. And it's difficult with life's inconsistencies to stay hopeful and to stay positive. The temptation, I think, for us is to become jaded, or to become cynical about these events. I mean, do you struggle with this, or is it just me? If you're following along today, I want to give you an idea here on hard times. So your fill-in for today for hard times is hard times are an opportunity to be a better you. Now, before I go into this any further, I want to kind of lighten our mood a little bit. There's a guy on the, an artist, I'll call him an artist, and what he does is he does an amazing job with a computer program called Photoshop. Now, Photoshop is where you can manipulate photos. You'll hear it kind of jokingly at times where maybe a family member isn't there today for Mother's Day, and they'll say, just Photoshop me in. Well, none of us know how to use Photoshop, and when we try to add someone into a picture, it really looks odd, right? This guy can do things to pictures, and you can't tell that he's done what he's done, and that it's a fabrication. His name is James Friedman. Now, in this popularity of his skill with Photoshop, people have started sending to him, especially on his Twitter account, photos, candid photos of people's lives, and they say, hey, will you alter this picture in some way? And James had to be raised by a mom that said, let it be. Because he responds many times with an altered photo that helps them know they should have just let it be. Let me give you a few examples. Here's two best friends. And the caption, she said, James, could you make me and my friend look the same height? Thanks. He says, done. You seeing that all right? I like this one. This is like one of those candid photos. You're running down. I don't even know what's going on. But she wants this to be a cooler photo, right? Because this isn't quite cool enough. So she says, James, can you please put a train behind me? You know, like she's running from a train. Again, James says, done. Body image seems to be a big thing for many of us. And this gal, she says, hi, James, can you make my right leg longer? It looks very short. Thanks. Love, Natasha. Done. I think that's a careful what you wish for, right? This one is just, okay, this kid here, he says, can you make me look less like a child? Yes, sir. Show that to your friends. This gal here, another body image one here, she says, can you make me look prettier? And then she describes that. Flawless skin, bluer eyes, etc. Flawless skin, bluer eyes, etc. This one really struck a chord with me. This gal, I'll read this one for you. It's kind of small. It says, hey, James, I love your work. You're hilarious. And I know, knowing you, you probably don't do this, and I know you get this message a lot, but here it goes. Okay, so I've struggled with my weight ever since I was like, what, 7? I've tried everything to lose weight too. I've done sports, ate healthy, exercised, took pills, legit, everything. But I still remain fat. Please make me skinny. For once, it would be a huge favor. I just want to see what I would look like if I was pretty. Thanks. How does this master reply? Skinny doesn't necessarily mean pretty. Don't let the struggle of trying to lose weight take the fun out of your life. Stay active, eat healthy, let yourself be happy just the way you are. So see, I think that James guy gets it. And I think he's trying to get that across in these photos. But, you know, hard times are an opportunity to be a better you. It's not the getting rid of the hard times. It's not the avoiding of the hard times. But it's in the midst of the difficulties and the struggles, the things that don't seem right in our life, that it's in that moment you can become a better you, who you are. I think this is the law of creation. When I say that, like, the law of the world seems to be this: hard things creates better things. Not just in human life or, you know, our journey. But, I mean, think of things like Like if you apply heat to gold, what happens? The impurities of the gold come out and you have a pure gold through that. So it's this application of something difficult, application of something hard into something, creates something better on the other side. It's the same in our lives and our journey. If you go to the gym and you start to work out, it won't take long if you're lifting weights or maybe you're running hard on the treadmill, and you'll build up lactic acid, and in the process, your muscle fibers will literally be shredding. You will be tearing your muscles in small ways, hopefully, but that's what's happening. And the days after, you are in a lot of pain. And you would say, well, that's the last time I'm going to the gym. But what do people say about going to the gym? No pain, no. Because you know what the gain is? The gain is over those days of pain, your muscles are rebuilding and rebuilding what you tore and then rebuilding more on top. You see, when you apply pressure, when you apply difficulty to it, what you have, yes, tears down, but something better is rebuilt. This is how the world we live in works. In working through hard times in your relationships, we'll make a stronger marriage or we'll make a stronger friendship. The failures that you have in life, though they may be many, the failures in life are what help make your successes seem that much sweeter. In fact, I don't know, can you understand a failure versus success without one or the other? I mean, does light exist without darkness? I mean, if all there was darkness, how would you say that it was something because that's all there is? You only know of darkness because of light. I would say we only know of good because evil rears its ugly head. It's these opposites, there's this and there's that, that help us understand that there is something in the process. I mean, God never said this life would be easy. He never promised that to us. But he did promise that in the tough times, he would provide opportunities for those tough moments to become good things in our lives. That good would come from the difficulties and the challenges and even the suffering. But there was a qualifier to that. It's for those that are following Christ, that are living according to his plan for them, in loving God and loving other people. Romans 8:28 says this, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them." All things in life for you will work together for good if you are one of these people who loves God and are living or called according to his purpose for you. All your events in life, the good events and the bad events, will work together for good. You see, good can come in our lives from winning the lottery. You'd say, well, yeah, I would hope so. But good can also come from bankruptcy. You see, all things, good can come from all things. In fact, I might even argue that it's probably more probable that good will come from bankruptcy than good would come from winning the lottery. Because sometimes some things in our lives seem so good, we forget that we ever needed God in the first place. What do I need God for? Everything's good. But it's when things aren't good that we realize we're in need of something greater than ourselves. You see, lives have been transformed for good after things like the death of a child. There have been ministries that real ministry began in the face of persecution, like lose your life kind of persecution. There are relationships that have become most meaningful in the face of a diagnosis of cancer. But at the same time, bitterness and anger and faithlessness have destroyed people to the point of suicide when a child dies. Ministry has ended and people have walked away from God during persecution. And relationships have been destroyed and isolation has set in when a diagnosis of cancer is given. These tough times, these difficult moments, good can come from them, but we can also choose to abandon any hope of good. Any hope of what God can do in redeeming and resurrecting that which is dead into something greater. I mean, could it be that the thing that we identify as a setback is really a setup for God to do something great in and through you? Because you and I are never going to be able to create a life that has no hardships. But you can choose to do good with the hardships that do come. In Ephesians 3:20, it says, "Now all glory to God, who is able, through his mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than what we might ask or think." You see, it doesn't do any good to tell people in the Christian faith that if you become a Christian or if you go to church or if you follow God, you'll have no hardships. Because that's not true. But what is true is that if you are following God, he will use those hardships to help you grow. They won't be wasted. I mean, there are so many examples of this in the Bible that I could give you. And the one that kind of popped in my head as I was preparing this is the story of Joseph. Now, Joseph was one of the 12 sons of a man named Jacob, who later God would change his name to Israel. And the 12 sons would eventually become the 12 tribes of Israel, the state of Israel, which Jacob was named Israel. So that's the beginning of the foundation of Judaism, which Jesus was Jewish and is the foundation of our faith. So Joseph, being the youngest in this group, did not really have a lot of favor with his brothers. There's a pecking order, and Joseph's at the bottom pretty much of the pecking order. And in the midst of being at the bottom, his brothers didn't like him, picked on him, and it was tough for him to scratch his way up. It made it even more difficult when Joseph started to have these dreams, and in these dreams, his brothers were bowing down to him because in the dream, he was in a position of authority. And so Joseph decided to share this dream with his brothers. His brothers did not take kindly to this dream. They weren't interested in Joseph saying, "Hey, you know, I have this dream that someday you're going to bow down to me." They didn't like that, and they started to hate Joseph. And not only did they hate Joseph, but they began to want to off him, to get rid of him. But one day, while traveling with his brothers, the opportunity came to get rid of Joseph. In Genesis chapter 37, verse 20, it says this. They said, "Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. And we can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." And they're going to leave him for dead. They were jealous of him. They didn't like what he had to say, and so they're going to leave him for dead. Now, Joseph has troubles. He has struggles. He has difficulties. But you see, Joseph understood something like what we're talking about today. Joseph understood that in the midst of these tough moments in life, that they could be used for good, that God could use these in a positive way. I don't know about you, but for me, that is so hard to remember in the moment, right? I mean, in the midst of the trouble, you just want to kind of cry out and scream. I think the more mature we get, or the more that we realize and see how God can use these things, we can remember quicker and quicker that in a difficult moment, God can use that for good, and that we have a choice whether to be positive or negative in the midst of our trials. But he's thrown down in the cistern, left to die. But just before they're leaving, all of a sudden this group starts coming along, and one of the brothers has an idea. "Hey, instead of just leaving him in the cistern, let's sell him off to slavery." And so they sell him off to slavery, and they take him on into Egypt, which is a very long way away from his home, his family, where he lived. So they go home, and they tell Dad, yep, he's been killed, that he died on this journey. But Joseph now is growing up in Egypt as a slave, and his slavery wasn't a positive experience either. But in that, he continued to look for ways to grow in the midst of the challenges. And God continued to use his difficulties and his struggles for good. And over the years, as they ticked by, God gave Joseph more and more opportunity, and Joseph took those opportunities. And the time came when no longer was he in this position of slavery, but he was second in command in Egypt. Second in command. And so as he was with them, in Egypt, the opportunity came for him to do something about the famine that was coming over the whole land. God had kind of given him an idea that this famine was coming. And so as a part of that, he started to store up grain in Egypt. And when the famine did come, people came from all around, even as far away as his family, his brothers came to Egypt to get grain so that they could live. And as they came there, they interacted with Joseph, not knowing it was Joseph. And Joseph provided grain, and he saved the lives of not only many, maybe millions of people, but he saved his own family. And through a set of circumstances, it became known to the brothers that this second in charge in Egypt that was providing them grain and allowing them to live was their brother Joseph. And they were incredibly humbled by that experience. In fact, they knew that they didn't deserve Joseph's care. They didn't deserve Joseph's ability or willingness to provide for them so they could live because of the terrible things that they had done to him, that they left him to die, that they sold him off into slavery. But you see, like I said, Joseph got it. Joseph understood the bigger picture of like what we're talking about today. And in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, these are the words that Joseph says to his brother. It's almost hard to believe that these are the words that comes out of his mouth when, you know, he could have stuck it to him, but instead he said this. He said, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people." You know, you meant harm, but God used it for good. You meant to tear me down, but God meant to use it to bring me up. That you meant to make my life more difficult, but God used the choices you made and that difficult situation for something better in my life and in my journey. And so I want to leave you with this question. Where are you with living through tough times, with difficulty, with struggle? Have you been through some difficulty recently? Maybe some of you are going through difficulty right now. But I promise you, each and every one of us, there's difficulty in our future. You won't avoid it, but you'll have a choice when it comes as to what to do with it. You can let it tear you apart. You can let it eat you up. You can bury your head in the sand, or you can use it in a way that would be good, in a way that God wants to use it to shape you, to mold you into something different than you are today. You see, when hard times come, I believe there's only two choices. There's death and there's resurrection. That we can choose in those hard times to just die in that, to become bitter in that, to become overwhelmed with that, to give up in all of that. But I think God is there to say, there's something that can be resurrected in this. There's something that can be transformed as a result of the hardships you've been through. And it may take a day for you to see it, or a week to see it, or a month. It may not be a year until you start to see how you can use that for good. It may be many years, depending on the pain, the difficulty, the trauma, the struggle that you've gone through. But I promise you that you will start to see glimpses of it along the way, no matter how hard it is. That God has something greater for you than where you're at. And it may be the application of a little bit of heat that refines that gold. Or it may be the working of that clay that creates a masterpiece. And it might be hard things that you're going to be asked to do. There may be hard moments that you're going to have to walk through. But don't run away from your problems. Don't run away from the struggles. Don't try to shield yourself from all of these things. But when they come, look at them as an opportunity to grow closer to God and to become a better you than you were. Maybe health, could be finances, could be a relationship, might be something with your job or your family or your dreams. But through it all, we need to keep our eyes on the one that knows us and that loves us and that cares for us. I'm not trying to oversimplify life. I'm not trying to like add fluff to this whole thing. Every one of us go through hard times, and God can use those hard times for good, and it is up to you. Whether you're going to follow him and stay connected with him, or whether you're just going to go swinging on your own. Every fight that comes your way, that you're going to muster up something within yourself to battle it, you're not going to make it. And if you want proof of that, look at the track record. But if you want something different, God is there to say, I will take the hardships and I will take the difficulties and I will resurrect something in you and in your life that you could have never done on your own. I'll take what was dead, and I will put new life to it. And you'll find yourself in a place you would have never thought you would be. You'll find yourself in the midst of being able to help people that you never knew you'd be able to help. That you would find grace and love and sympathy and help and care within you that would have never been there before. Because through it all, we have to keep our eyes on Him, the author and the perfecter of our faith, the God who created us, who knows us, who loves us, who has a plan for us. And we can run away from that plan, but that doesn't mean it's not there. We can deny His presence. It doesn't mean His presence isn't there. God loves you. And He wants to use your hurt to do great things. All of us will experience it, but what we do with it is our choice. I want you to be thinking of that as we sing this closing song together, as to where you are in your journey, and what kinds of things are really going to bring the hope that you're looking for, or to redeem the hurts and the struggles and the sufferings that you've been through. Because God will use all for His good. Jacob.